Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
This is New Retirement Radio with the team from Prout Financial Design.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
And welcome aboard to another edition of New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design, located in Traverse City, Michigan. Our regular guest star of New Retirement Radio, Mr. Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner, is in. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Ron. It's great to be here on August 22nd, Thursday. If you happen to be listening to the rebroadcast on Saturday, of course, it is a rebroadcast. Thank you for listening. We get lots of great comments and really appreciate those who listen live. If you happen to not be available and you do want to hear a rebroadcast of this at another time other than Saturday, we have the podcasts on our website, proutfinancialdesign.com. Huge response to our class. We're teaching on the SECURE Act. 8/28, August 28th. Man, is it possible that's next week? Yes, indeed it is. Thursday is full at the Cambria. But we also have a class on Tuesday, September 24. That one is a little more than half full at this point. Tuesday, September 24th, with the new SECURE Act, would eliminate the stretch IRA. Tentatively scheduled by the Senate to be voted on this fall. We'll see whether or not they get to it, given their schedule. But the chances of that happening are relatively good. Talked to Ed Slott actually a couple weeks ago about the very same, and he said, same thing. We don't know that it'll be enacted, but it has a strong chance of being. And there are some positive things about that act that would positively impact those who are trying to save for retirement, but for those who are trying to pass on a retirement account, could mean or would mean significant changes in the tax.
This will benefit people, I would say, high-value IRAs?
Higher-value IRAs, generally those IRAs with balances over $500,000 will be most impacted because of the significant tax increase on non-spouse beneficiaries, generally considered children, who will have to then take a much greater benefit, greater amount from those IRAs, causing a lot more tax than otherwise would have been. In fact, 5 to 10 times the amount is an accurate sum as to what they'll have to take, given that they inherit that from mom and dad.
So proutfinancial.com.
Proutfinancialdesign.com
for the information. And who are you traveling with today?
We have with us Deanne Jennings.
That's Deanne Jennings.
Deanne Jennings, she is a TD Ameritrade account client account specialist. And because Heidi and Shea are both out, well, we've got Deanne with us, helping us out with the Shea stats.
All right.
Representative for that. So,
welcome aboard. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here on the show.
Pleasure to have you. It's great. And I thought it was kind of interesting. Your husband, Larry, owns Jonah Jigs. Jonah's Jigs was on August 11th, I think it was, on Mike Avery's outdoor program.
Larry makes some of the best fishing
equipment lures out there, and as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Jonah's Jigs.
Jonah's Jigs.
I'm a fan. I'm a personal fan.
It's great. Great to have you. So the first part of the show is how are Social Security retirement benefits calculated? And it's interesting. I hear from clients, it seems like every 2 to 3 weeks, should I wait to take the benefits what are the benefits of that and what are the drawbacks? And if you go see the Social Security Administration, in fact, this story last week, a client said, well, you know, they really got on me for not taking my benefits at age 62 at the Social Security Administration office and asked me why I would possibly even think of waiting. So it was really interesting from that perspective. Because they actually, these clients wanted assurance from me. You know, are we doing the right thing here? They are really pushing me to take those benefits. Well, the reason they were pushing in their defense and Social Security's defense was, why would you wait? I mean, you want the income while you're younger and when you're initially retired, right? Most people would say, well, yes. Well, the difference is so significant if you can possibly wait. It's about 8% per year that you're going to gain because you waited. Given that increase, the amount of increase over your life expectancy could well be $75,000, $100,000, $125,000 over your life expectancy. So there are a lot of reasons to consider it.
There's a lot of considerations, though. Suppose you adapt that strategy, say, I'll wait until I'm 68 or 70.
Sure.
So in the meantime, I'll begin to take money out of my 401 or IRA. Well, now how does that factor in if you weren't taking it from there or taking as much from there? Is there a way to compute all of that?
There is. If you actually, wanted to do a financial plan, we run those plans that show the difference in income given that you've waited on Social Security benefits, that'll actually show the actual number.
Okay.
And obviously we have to estimate life expectancies, but the difference in numbers are significant. And then the other part of that is if today's tax rates go higher, which they have a relatively significant chance of doing, then it would have made more sense to draw more out of those retirement accounts today. Because we sunset, this current tax package sunsets in 2025, 6 short years away. So, really not that far out. Crazy stuff, huh?
Crazy, man.
Mm-hmm. So, how are your Social Security benefits calculated? Number one, how many years have you worked? It's based on 35 years of earnings history. So, quick calculation, if you wait until you're 70 to collect your benefits, that means that they're taking, generally, from age 35 on. But they're taking the highest 35 years of your salary.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, the longer you wait, the more income you've earned in your later years. That's why the benefit can go up quite significantly, especially because those who are older tend to have higher incomes. And that income, then, is credited to your Social Security benefit, increases your Social Security benefit that much more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Experience, time, tend to be more money.
Got it.
If you worked less than 35 years, it still uses the 35 years of salary, actually assigning a zero amount to those years.
Bummer.
Yes. So that's where it can be quite negative. And it's interesting.
Is there a minimum amount that they pay? If you worked like 5 years, and they go, okay, in the last 35 years, you've earned, you know, your working part, you've earned $200,000, we'll just say. You make $200,000 in 35 years. Therefore, your benefit is a nickel. No, I mean, is there a minimum amount where they say at some point?
Yes, indeed.
Because it would be absurd to pay somebody a benefit that.
You have to have 40 credits, which is each quarter. Each quarter is one credit.
Ten years.
You have to have 10 years.
Oh. In. If you don't have 10 years in, you don't qualify?
Correct.
Wow.
Unless you're married and qualify under your spousal benefits.
Right. So even a 10, okay.
Yep.
40 credits. All right.
40 credits required. And number two, how much have you earned then in each year? Earnings only help boost your future Social Security benefits up to a certain point. That earnings amount for 2018, any guesses?
Say that again.
In 2018, the maximum amount of earnings that is subject to Social Security taxes was?
$120,000.
Close.
$128,000.
Yeah, $128,000. Yes. So pretty significant in terms of the maximum. And that's, you'd mentioned actually, I think it was before the show, you know, how there are some proposals out there to increase that amount to unlimited. Now, why would that be the case? Wouldn't those people benefit if they give a greater amount? Well, under the current formula, the maximum benefit where you're going to receive an income based on that is the 128, the maximum benefit that you're taxed on, if you will, or the max tax that you're subject to, based on the benefit calculations, is based on $128,400. So, in essence, those people who have to give or are taxed a greater a sum than that will receive no corresponding benefit from Social Security.
So that's where they cut it at 128.
Correct.
If they kept taxing you on that, especially if it was unlimited, you'd be putting a whole bunch of money into the Social Security lockbox, but you'd never get any of that. You wouldn't get all of it back.
Correct.
You wouldn't come close to getting it back.
Get much less than proportionate to others, if you will, within that. Within the earnings category. So that's important to remember. And then, yes?
Another question from the peanut gallery.
Sure, you bet.
Suppose you get out of one of our fine law schools and your first job starts paying you 128 grand a year. You never made less than 128 grand a year. You never put any money into Social Security, right?
Well, if you made 128.
No, if you made over 128, you wouldn't have to pay money into Social Security, right?
Well, you're already paying Social Security up to that income.
Oh, up to, okay, that's
up
right.
Up to.
I got it.
Up to beyond that, you're not
beyond
being
that,
taxed
okay.
For the Social Security benefit. You're still paying into Medicare.
So you're not excused, it's just you don't pay for anything over 128.
Correct.
Got it.
For the Social Security benefit itself.
Good that we clarified that for me.
Yes.
All right.
Excellent. If you work beyond age 62, earnings in those years will be counted at their normal, nominal rather, non-inflation adjusted amount. So you don't get quite the credit beyond age 62 for working, but you still do get an increase in credit. It's just not as great as it otherwise would have been. That increase in benefits you can easily see from Social Security. From 62 to 70, you'll get about an 8% per year increase in your benefits. Now, one of the questions about that, or concerns about that, is, you know, what if I don't live till I'm 78, 79, 80, 85 years old? Well, then, is your spouse collecting your benefit? What other reasons might you wait? One of those might be, it's stated right in here, many women took significant time away from work to raise one or more children. This implicates or impacts women much more than men, that 35-year average. If she, in this case, is collecting based on your benefit, then the longer you wait, Ron specifically, then the more that the
Laura
lovely
would collect.
Laura, as you say, would collect, given that you've waited. So there may be a death benefit, in essence, that you're simply waiting on for both of you to collect an increasing benefit. Because if you pass away, then she gets to collect your benefit. Obviously, given that you waited, that's a much increased higher benefit, if you will.
Capiche.
A much higher benefit, yes. Then when do you claim benefits? Those born between 1943 and 1954, age 66, is the full retirement age. So that full retirement age is steadily increasing. For myself, it's almost age 67. The maximum full retirement age is 67, minus 66 and 10 months or whatever it is. So that full retirement age is what you get full retirement benefits, but you still increase, which is kind of confusing.
Yeah.
Those benefits still increase beyond age 66 and whatever months. If you decide not to collect up until age 70, at which you are forced to take your benefit.
Okay.
Age 70 is the maximum age.
Okay.
All right. Let's take a break, and then we'll discuss the Shea stats given by Deanne today and some other points, too. The Shea Stats, Deanne.
Shea Stats. All right. What do we have today, Deanne?
All right. Our first stat. Last Thursday, August 15th, The 30-year Treasury bond yield fell to 1.98%, creating an all-time recent low. What are your thoughts, Dennis?
Dennis, was that when they had the big drop that the 10-year and the 2-years crossed the line?
Yeah, there was an inversion of the yield. The 30-year, that's the record low, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Since they've been auctioning those back from the mid-70s or so. What was it, 74,
yeah,
76?
Yeah, 77, I think.
Yeah, 77. So that's incredible. Long-term rates, all-time low. All-time low. That's really something to mark.
What does that mean?
It means that those who are trying to save money in CDs, sorry. It's just not a good time for those who are conservative savers, if you will. Those who are borrowing money, rates on 15, 30-year debt are probably going to continue to come down. So for those who are thinking about remortgaging or refinancing their houses,
right,
the next 6-9 months may be a great time to do that. You know, keep an eye on those rates. Bankrate.com is a great place to do that.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. What else do you have, Deanne?
China has increased the tariff that applies to its imports coming into its country from the USA by an average of 12.4 percentage points since May 2018.
Our friends, the Chinese.
Mm.
Not so friendly anymore. Interesting in the negotiating process, isn't it? Politically and, economically as well, having an impact. But, you know, has it really, really been felt? With some sectors of the economy, it certainly has. But it doesn't seem to have had that much impact. Although, if those were removed, be very positive for our overall economy. If we're able to work things through with Mr. Xi or Z or however you pronounce his name.
Z, but part of they want to make sure that they stop stealing our intellectual secrets.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
They're on a war path with that. Mm. It's incredible how much of their technology they're just ripping off. And it's great that they're getting some pushback, I think. From my perspective, and I think both sides of the aisle would agree on that. They're not playing from a fair field. And when I speak to those individuals who are operating businesses where they're trading with China, they comment that it's almost impossible. You have to cross every T and dot every I when it comes to trying to negotiate with them, that they're not, if you will, fair business partners when it comes to try to trade with the Chinese. Very difficult to trade with them.
So if they try to take advantage of us, we say, we are your largest partner. We buy most of your stuff. What happens? What happens if we stop buying your stuff?
Yeah. Mm. Push back.
So there's some leverage.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Next stat. 44.4% of individual tax filers in the U.S. did not pay any federal income tax in 2018. 44.4%. Are you surprised by that percentage?
Yeah, every time I see it, I'm surprised. 44% of the tax filers pay no tax. Significant number. That basically means that 56% do. So a little over half do. A little bit less than half don't pay any tax whatsoever.
So if you work for somebody, taxes are taken out. You're withholding. Mm-hmm. But I guess some
you're
going to
get it back in terms
back.
Of credit.
Yeah, so you wind up paying zero.
Correct.
Wow. 44%, that's a lot.
It is.
Yeah. Surprising.
Close to the halfway mark.
All right. What else do you have there, Deanne?
In 2016, 12.2% of individual bankruptcy filers were at least 65 years old compared to the 2.1% of filers that were 65 years old in 1991. Significant increase there.
What was it in 91, 1%?
2.1% in 1991 versus 12.2% in 2016.
Basically 5 to 6 times the amount.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Filing bankruptcy at age 65 or more.
Yeah.
Sad.
You had medical expenses, you think? Or
I can only guess it, perhaps.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I don't know that why. The why behind it. But obviously, basically no worse time to be in that kind of financial situation. Very sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's talk debt. Ron,
Yes.
Are you ready for a question?
Okay.
Do you want to guess what the national credit card debt was in May 2019? National credit card debt. What was it?
For, let's see. I'm going to, I'll just, like billions? Could it be $10 billion? No, it's going to be more than that. $10 billion.
It's a good guess. It's $1.07
trillion. $1.0 trillion.
Trillion.
Trillion. Just the credit card debt. Just the credit card debt.
In billions, 1,000 billion, you know, just for those who want to point on it.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's all the money that people have spent that they owe now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Credit card debt.
Yes.
Wow.
So, good business to be in, huh?
Part number two to the question. Do you think American student loan debt is less than or greater than the national credit card debt?
Tough questions today. I'm going to say less than. Oh.
Trying to give you a clue.
Just trying to help me out there. A little bit.
Well, in honor of fall approaching, I have a little back-to-school stat here. Sorry for saying the S word for any students out there that are listening. But 45 million Americans owe $1.48 trillion in student loan debt as of June 30th, 2019. It's a 114% increase in just the last 10 years. So that means American student loan debt has indeed surpassed
Wow. The
credit card debt for our country.
1.5 trillion. Wow.
Wow. Yeah, trillion. Serious stuff there.
Yeah. That's why I think students are starting to look a lot more closely at, am I going to get a return on this investment? Does this make sense? Does this career make sense? Can I actually use it in a career? Is this where I really want to go? Fortunately or unfortunately, because the cost has increased so dramatically, it's causing, it only makes sense, parents and children to say, is this really what I want to pursue, and or do I need to make some adjustments there given the cost increased so much? We have a phone call, do we?
Where would people ever get the notion that they could just continue spending money that they don't have?
Yeah.
Where would that idea?
It's increased over time, I think.
Where would that idea come from, do you
almost
think?
Like the, I don't know, Ron. So, yeah.
All right. Let's go to on the phone lines here. Herb is in Traverse City for Dennis Prout. Good morning, Herb.
Good morning, Dennis. Ron, how you doing?
Morning, Herb. Fantastic. Thank you.
Good. When you do your introduction, you always say that you're a member of FINRA. I don't know if you've ever talked about what FINRA is and how people can access that to find out about their financial investor.
Okay, they're a government entity that oversees advisors like myself. But what you're saying, Herb, is you'd like me to discuss that in more detail in the coming weeks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I appreciate the...
I don't know if you've ever covered it, but I just thought it would be kind of an interesting topic to talk about it. I went to a seminar in Chicago, and they were talking about it. Very interesting program and very interesting website that you can access to for education.
Excellent. Well, we'll do that. Appreciate the good word.
Stay tuned for more on FINRA.
Yes, we'll do that. Never had that comment, and my gosh, we'll do it.
All right, let's go. Ralph is calling in from Wolverine, Michigan. Good morning, Ralph.
Good morning, Ron and Dennis. I was calling about the little bit clarification on that stat that 44% of filers don't pay any taxes. There's probably a significant portion of people who don't file who also don't pay any taxes. So in terms of the total population, it's probably quite a bit higher than that 44% that don't pay any taxes.
And a great point. And I wasn't going to bring that up, but you did. So there it is. You bet. A great point. Many don't have to file. They don't have to file. And so the actual percentage of the populace who don't pay any taxes is actually much greater than that stated. Yes.
And those are individual tax returns. Then you have corporations that don't like Amazon,
didn't
pay taxes.
Perhaps, correct, depending on their write-offs and so forth.
Yeah.
You bet.
All right, thanks, Ralph. We'll go back to Traverse City. Hugh is on the line. Good morning, Hugh.
A gracious good morning. Since you mentioned debt, from time to time, I will follow the U.S. debt clock.
Yeah.
And they say right now the total U.S. debt, public and private, is $74 trillion. But who counts small change?
$74 trillion. That must be on budget and obligations in the future as
pension,
well.
Pension,
Social Security, and all the rest. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Take care.
Thank Appreciate you. The call.
All right. And the deficit's climbing up now, too. They've got a 2-year budget deal, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Which, no limits.
Yeah, no limits.
I think that I think it's right now the it's about $22 trillion yeah. or so.
So say it's no wonder you have people that have $1 trillion in credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting. No pun intended. So you attended an Ed Slot conference here last month.
I did.
And had a question for you. I said, no, are there a couple of things there that really... they really hit on that you were surprised at or that you thought were really interesting personally for yourself?
Yes, absolutely. It was a phenomenal conference. Ed Slot is a wealth of information. It was so great. Yeah. But two of the what I call biggies that he hit on during the conference, one was make sure your beneficiaries are up to date, and that includes your primary and contingent beneficiaries. He said the number one error in paperwork, you know, when somebody passes away, the number one error is the beneficiaries have not been updated and the money ends up going to someone it wasn't intended to go
Don't
to.
Don't you think Dennett, Prout Financial should have Prout Financial Beneficiary Day every mm-hmm. year?
That's a good
Check
idea.
Check your beneficiaries.
Well, I'll tell you, Ron, I was really excited because attending that conference, in working at Prout Financial Design, we actually have set a process in place to check clients' beneficiaries. Like every time they come into a meeting, we have a full spreadsheet and we want them to review those beneficiaries, whether they're primary or contingent. So we got it in place. But yeah. Yes, we should have a beneficiary day.
National
exactly.
beneficiary day. I might have to get to work on that for you, Dennis.
You know, we should both work on it together.
Yes.
That'd be game for that. What's interesting, last week went up to Quetico Provincial Park with five other guys invited up there. Talk about insane beauty and danger all at the same time, but it was an amazing trip.
In what park?
Quetico, Quetico Provincial Park. It's north and west of Duluth, about 2 hours. it's north of the Boundary Waters.
Right. Oh,
it's the wild part of the Boundary Waters, if you will.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. But on the trip back, having a conversation with a couple of guys and the gentleman and his son, he said, somehow we got into the beneficiary conversation.
In the wilderness.
Shocked, I know. Here we are. Right. On the road with a financial advisor talking about that, especially Dennis Proud talking about beneficiaries. But he said, you know, we've just named our oldest son as contingent beneficiary. He'll take care of the other five children. There are six children total. And then he can gift it out to them. I looked at him. I said, well, I said, there's a problem with that because if that's the case, and I'm not going to name names, of course, this particular young man, is going to have to pay the tax on all those benefits in order to gift it to the other children because most of the funds are in IRAs. Mm. He can disclaim it if he wants, but then it's subject to the documents themselves. All of a sudden, you get into really deep, miry junk, if you will, where it's very clear. If you just name those contingent beneficiaries equally, the children equally. Now, obviously, that can't always or doesn't always make the most sense. But if indeed it does, naming them individually as contingent beneficiaries is extremely powerful. Then they each get their beneficiary IRA. Those funds go direct there. They then pay the tax at their own respective tax rates.
Yeah, there you
Hugely
go.
Hugely powerful.
Yeah.
So he was thankful for that, huh?
He was appreciative, very much so. You bet.
And Ed even said to make sure that those contingents add up to completely 100% because sometimes they don't. Like if you have three contingents and people just will say 33.3, 33.3, 33.3, that doesn't add up to 100%.
That's right.
Somebody's got to be 33.4, you know.
There you go. Cross those T's, dot those I's.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's where we come in. Next, the 60-day rollover. For those who have emergency needs, a whole piece of information written here, a newsletter from Ed Slot. What are financially strapped, panicked individuals supposed to do? The 60-day window in an IRA allows you to take a once-per-year withdrawal as long as you get the money back in within the 60 days after receipt. It's not the date at which you requested the funds, it's when you received them. So, for instance, October 28th, you requested the funds, you got them on November 7th, let's say, through the mail. In essence, then, you have until January 7th to get the money back into the account.
60 days, okay.
60 days. So November, December, January, you have to get those funds back in. And so it's
interest-free, penalty-free.
Interest and penalty-free. It's a 60-day window.
Okay.
The key is, of course, if you're under 59 and a half, you're trying to avoid the penalty, which is 10%, and the tax. You can also roll a portion of the funds back in if you want to. So it's in essence, a partial rollover. So you take out $40,000, you're not able to replace it. You put all your money on black, if you will. It didn't pay off, and you only got $20,000 to replace it with. You could indeed just replace half the funds, if you like, and then pay the penalty and tax on the other. However, keep in mind you can only do this once per year. So for those who are thinking this is a calendar year event, it's not calendar year. It's year to year, if you will. So you have to wait another year later, in this case after January 7th, in order to effect another 60-day rollover option. Important to know for those who are trying to think about what are my options in terms of we need some liquidity. It may be an option you want to take advantage of. Keep in mind the dangers there are significant, too, in terms of tax and penalties. This amount, and I've had accountants caution again and again on the real cost of doing this, maybe actually in the 30 to 50% range.
Wow.
So think about it in terms of the actual cost versus a home equity line or whatever it might be if you have a significant emergency. These funds are available to you, but keep in mind the cost can be very, very significant if you go beyond that 60-day time frame. Only one's allowed per year. The 12 months begin with the date the funds are received by the account owner, the 12-month time frame. IRA rollover dollars can be used any way within the law, obviously, so it's legal, that you want to once you receive those funds. Can be used to cover anything. So it doesn't matter how you pay that back as long as it's a valid check that you put the money back into the account with to avoid that penalty and tax after that 60 days. If the rollover money is redeposited, taxes and possible penalties will be avoided. And then only the amount distributed, you can't put any funds more than the amount you took out. So you took out $40,000. This is kind of a ridiculous example, but let's say you bought Bitcoin.
Let's say you won on
black or whatever.
Yeah.
You bought some Bitcoin and it's worth $60,000 when you liquidate it.
Yeah.
35 days later, you can't put the $60,000 back in. You can just put the $40,000 back in. So you can only replace what you took out. So you'd have to keep that other $20,000 in this case as profit and figure out what to do with that otherwise. Then the IRA bankruptcy protection is potentially lost as well if all or a portion of the rollover assets are outside of the retirement account when a bankruptcy case is actually filed. We've never seen that situation, but in the event that that were the case and or that's a consideration in this, keep in mind IRAs have significant bankruptcy protection. So be aware of that caveat with doing something like this. You could expose yourself to much more risk than you would have otherwise been. The IRS will generally deny waivers of the 60-day rollover rule, when IRA funds are used as a short-term funding source. So if you want to extend it, for whatever reason you weren't able to get it back in, they're going to deny that in most cases. So the 60 days is pretty hard and fast in terms of taking short-term funds from an IRA. This kind of withdrawal is not allowed on simple IRAs or on 401k plans. 401ks many times will offer a short-term loan option, but keep in mind you've got to pay that back as well on a schedule.
What's after 59 and a half? Did you say it's different if somebody wants to dip into their IRA?
Right. After 59 and a half, the 10% penalty is waived. So age 59 and a half is the age at which you can draw monies out of an IRA without having to pay the 10% penalty. You still have to pay the tax. So the tax is your cost in that event. Keep in mind or think about then the time frame that you're drawing it out. Perhaps you could draw part of it out this year and part next. Always consider your tax bracket as a part of this, because that is your true cost of drawing this money out. It's the tax bracket that you pay.
Absolutely.
The tax bracket, rather the tax that you pay on the amount based on your tax bracket itself. Your last income, if you will, that you're paying the tax on.
So you don't have to put it back in, but
you don't have to put it back in if you're okay with paying the penalty if under age 59 and a half, as well as the tax.
But over 59.
Over 59 and a half,
it's
just taking it out and paying the tax. It's interesting.
What if you want to put a whole lump sum back, though? What if you said you took out your 40 or 50, 100 grand and paid the tax on it, but now you want to put it back in there and have it, you know, start working and churning up some more interest for you? Can you do that?
As long as you do it within the 60 days.
Okay.
Keep in mind, you could do this at age 75 if you wanted to. You got the right to take the 60-day rollover. So you drew out $100,000 to buy that boat you've always wanted, and you got the financing you wanted 30 days later.
Okay.
You could, in essence, theoretically, put all the $100 back or a portion of it, and then you're only taxed then on that portion you keep out. So it can be a valid short-term funding source for those who might need it. I had one more question for Deanne before the end of the show. The second thing that was biggest to you in terms of that Ed Slott conference.
Yes, he discussed Roth conversions for quite a while, actually. Mm. And just talking about Roth IRAs are going to become more valuable as tax rates increase. Now, obviously, tax rates are the lowest they've ever been, but what's low will probably go up at some point. So Roth IRAs are so important. If you're thinking about a Roth conversion, to do that in your sweet spot time of life, which is age 59 and a half to 70 and a half. And then watch that tax bracket during your Roth conversion. Ed suggested to convert after Thanksgiving, so you have a better idea of your year's income, so you can watch that tax bracket and not get hit. Yes.
Best time to convert, you said, is 59 and a half to 70 and a half?
Yeah, your sweet spot time, they call it.
And right now is a good time because of the low taxes. Because you have to pay the
historically low tax brackets. Mm-hmm. Again, the cost is as low as it, I think it's safe to say, ever been in terms of tax brackets, because they're so wide, if you will, and they're relatively low compared to history. And given most likely they're going to be going up, mm-hmm. all kinds of stealth taxes coming on,
mm-hmm.
the Roth conversion may want to be one of the better values you can take advantage of.
And he mentioned to consider that Roth conversion if you have a trust with an IRA beneficiary, because it could be a possible option to the SECURE Act if it takes place.
You bet. Because those funds would not then be taxable to the trust.
Mm-hmm.
And trust tax rates are amazingly high. So given that there it's a contingent beneficiary, that's another thing to consider in relation to that Roth conversion.
See your financial planner, though. I would imagine that's where you start if you want to convert your IRA to a Roth IRA.
In essence, it's forward tax planning, and you really do want to have a face-to-face conversation talking about these things, because they're that complex.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.